This episode is proudly sponsored by Thread Club from Life with Bess, a curated monthly subscription service that comes right to your door. Welcome to the Stitching & Co. podcast. My name is Bess Wilkins, a physiotherapist who took a career break, refound a love for embroidery, and never looked back. I now teach all things modern embroidery, encouraging creativity to weave its way into our busy lives. We're going to hear from some pretty amazing embroidery artists, learn fiber art techniques, and discuss the roller coaster of emotions that comes with being a modern day crafter. Let's embrace community over competition and get busy stitching. Hello, hello, my friends, and welcome to episode 3 of the Stitching & Co. podcast. I quickly just want to say a massive thank you to everyone for your support with our launch last week. We've had such amazing feedback and people tuning in from all around the world. It means so much to us that this podcast is already doing its job in allowing our stitchy friends to feel supported and heard. To start this week's podcast, let's read our review of the week. This week's review is from Slothy01, who says, I've been following Bess for a while on Instagram, and while I had never thought of myself as being crafty, I realized through listening to this podcast how happy stitching is making me and helping to water my busy soul. Keep being wonderful and sharing you. I absolutely love this review. Stitching has such a beautiful way of making us all feel just that little bit happier, and that's such a precious thing to be able to continually promote. Amazingly, we've actually had quite a number of reviews, so thank you to all of those who have left us a review on Apple Podcasts and even on our Stitching & Co. Facebook page. It certainly helps widen the reach of this conversation to be hopefully heard by those who need it the most. If you have friends who you know would love this show, why not push the share button on your podcast app and let them know? And now, let's get back to the show. When planning this episode, I asked a number of my stitching friends what they wanted to hear discussed on the show. And surprisingly to me, the number one resounding theme was asking me to walk them through my design process. This actually caused me to take stock of what I do because it has just evolved and morphed over the last 12 months as I have allowed creativity to lead the way. So here I am. I'm going to talk you through my creative process and also give you 15 great tips when it comes to designing embroidery pieces. I guess the first major tip I have is that design should always be felt and not forced. I've lost count of the number of times that I have sat down to design when my energy is sapped or I just wasn't feeling it, and the end result is, let's say, less than desirable. The piece would only come out feeling somewhat uninspired and stiff and felt very similar to what I can only describe as writer's block for embroidery. I have learned in the last year to align my productivity and creativity with my monthly cycle. If you've come across this, then you'll know definitely what I'm talking about. But if not, it is a really fascinating concept to learn about, and I definitely recommend looking further into it. But basically, there's a productivity hack for women that aligns different tasks to various stages of a woman's cycle. For example, one week I might be super creative where I can just sit down with an iPad and things just come so easily. And then one week I'm feeling not creative or inspired in any way and everything I draw I absolutely hate. In those weeks, I tend to feel more like doing repetitive, boring tasks, like folding fabric for my starter kits. This is all normal and it's important to lean into what we feel like doing so that we remain productive without forcing creativity when it just isn't there. I also like to create a backlog of sketches so that they're ready, waiting for when I feel like I'm in the mood to stitch them. My embroidery style is a combination of whimsical and lifelike botanical. Many of my designs are inspired by nature and everyday life. And I grew up surrounded by flowers and floral arrangements because my mum, while never formally working as a florist, had a love for floristry and even did a short course on it. So loving all things botanical kind of just came naturally to me. My embroidery style mirrors much of my own personal style, and that's what I love about it. I've been doing seasonal capsule wardrobes for the past couple of years, and it was not surprising to notice that the main colours that I love to wear were also my main branding colours for Life with Bess. It was all florals, soft boho colours, and natural fibres. These are all big parts of my personal style, and so my creativity is ignited best when stitching and designing up those exact things. But I've not always been able to go from what's in my head into something I can draw on an iPad straight away. Oh no, I am not a naturally gifted artist, if there is such a thing, and in fact, it only took until last year for me to be able to find a drawing style that actually felt true to who I am. I've always wanted to draw florals well, so when I was bullet journaling last year, I was choosing floral themes and practicing a couple of simple flowers every month. This simple act inspired me to continue to improve, and by mid-2020, around the same time that Life with Bess was really kicking into gear with starter kits and patterns, I started an 100-day project of drawing various flowers and plants, methodically just picking one flower per day and learning how to draw it. I was using YouTube tutorials, blog posts, Pinterest, any instructions I could find, and I then was posting my finished piece on TikTok as my way to stay motivated and accountable. Long story short, I finally emerged with a few different styles all in together that came to something that I felt was true to me, and that kind of just has overflowed into my embroidery design. I love and appreciate so many other styles of embroidery, but when I sit down to design my pieces, I always come back to nature and botanicals. This is my comfort zone, and I really love sitting in this space. And I think the second tip I have for you is to play around with different styles until you find the one that you absolutely love. Don't kick yourself or beat yourself up if everything you touch feels like rubbish. This will happen over and over again until you stumble across the right fit. And don't be surprised if your tastes evolve over time either. Which leads me to my third point, which is all about experimentation. Experimenting with different styles. It is incredibly important to continue experimenting with new styles, color palettes, different textures, trying new fabrics to allow your style to evolve. You might even take an idea from one style, overlay it over another style to become something completely and totally unique to you. The main encouragement I can offer is to just allow yourself to evolve your design and style into something that is truly and uniquely you. I am still finding new elements of my own style and creative voice, and that is what keeps the magic alive. One of the questions I love to ask my guests on the show is, where do you find your inspiration? So I guess I should probably let you know where I get mine. And this is my fourth point, which is always be on the lookout for inspiration. Obviously, a big part of my inspiration comes from my own personal clothing style and decorating style, as I just outlined. Ideas come to me at the weirdest times, in the shower, driving the car, in my dreams. Nowhere is safe. A lot of the time, I have these ideas and concepts rattling around in my brain for a while before I sketch them out. But some ideas come from much more specific places than that. I see inspiration in life around me and trends that are happening. For example, the Schuyler Sisters piece was inspired from watching Hamilton the musical on Disney+. But due to copyright issues, this piece was a just for fun piece. I purposely made sure I didn't sell any originals of it or even create a pattern for it because the thought of Disney coming after me for copyright infringement made me feel sick to my stomach. I do plan on doing an how-to instructional for creating the 3D skirts, but that would be as far as I go. This leads me to my fifth tip, which is to respect the copyright and originality of others. This is such a big topic. For example, I recently found She the Bee's embroidered cork collection on Instagram, which is stunning, by the way, and you should totally check out her page. In her cork collection, she stitches directly onto fabric made out of cork. How cool is that? And it is a really stunning effect that I absolutely love. The key things to note in terms of copywriting here is that She the Bee didn't create cork fabric. It's sold publicly, so that's not breaching copyright to stitch on cork fabric. However, if I stitch similar florals in similar colors and similar stitches on the cork fabrics, then I'd really be pushing the friendship. Instead of claiming it as my own, I could stitch it purely for fun, make sure my Instagram caption was super clear that it was inspired by She the Bee on Instagram, and then I could tag her in my post. In this situation, I would be using her ideas to practice, but it wouldn't be claiming it as my original, that's for sure. The best parallel I can come up with is in music. Most of us recognize the difference between jazz music, classical music, and an 80s power ballad. The styles have key elements that identify them as that particular style. There isn't just one jazz song and then jazz is off limits for everyone else. No, it's a framework for inspiration. However, if someone wrote a song to the tune of What a Wonderful World by Louis Armstrong and put different lyrics to it, then we'd all be feeling a little uncomfortable due to how similar it sounded. I mainly use Instagram and Pinterest to look at photographs of nature and create mood aesthetics. I even have an embroidery inspiration board where I pin cool concepts and scenes. For example, on one of my boards at the moment, I have a few lemons in a mason jar, another of a girl running through a field of flowers, and another of a drying herb rack. These all caught my attention for one reason or another. These then give me a starting point to try and recreate the feeling that these photos give me. I then use the photographs as reference images, mentally merge a handful of aspects, lean into my own drawing style, and then pick thread colors and stitch types that match with my style. The one thing I avoid is to look at other people's finished embroidery artwork as a starting point for my own design. The temptation, even subliminally, is to replicate what we see because the creative thinking has already been done for you. To our brain, it is the path of least resistance, and it is actually the same action we do when following an embroidery pattern. But it is dangerous when trying to come up with unique designs, as your brain will want to reuse it and will find it hard to move past what you've already seen. So tip number 6, which is also one of the key themes of the Stitching & Co. podcast, is to promote community over competition. One thing that I loved is to celebrate other people's achievements and watch their style and creativity evolve over time. I will often look at their artwork and go, wow, how on earth did they come up with that? But as we heard from Amanda Bride in episode 2, this can often lead to a feeling of jealousy that they're doing so much better than you are, and then scrolling socials becomes less and less enjoyable. I have learned through intentional practice how to balance celebrating other embroiderers in what they're doing while finding my own inspiration from other areas. I am so careful now with what I look to for inspiration, and this is just something that you will learn over time. This is also one of the ways I protect myself from comparison paralysis and self-doubt. Let's move on to the drawing part of the process. Believe it or not, I wouldn't class myself as an amazing artist. I actually cannot sketch an accurate flower from memory. I can do loose form artistic florals from my own head, but to make something realistic, I need a reference to help me. My drawing style is at the perfect level for embroidery, which is very lucky for me. So here is tip number 7. You don't need to be an amazing artist to design and draw up your own patterns. You just need to be able to convey the key elements. I am actually extremely thankful for the 100-day project I did, as it helped me practice looking at reference images for inspiration and drawing them out on an iPad without tracing or copying them completely. I occasionally sketch designs out on paper, but majority of the time I use my iPad, Apple Pencil, and Procreate. Procreate is a drawing design app that is super user-friendly and is well worth the $14 to download it. When designing an embroidery piece, less is often more. Most of the time, I'm just drawing the outline of the design, whether it's flowers, bees, leaves, it can be anything, with some extra little details here or there as cues for me when I'm stitching. Which leads me to tip number 8, which is don't worry too much about the detail of your drawing. Instead, think of how you're going to stitch it. The whole time I'm drawing, I am constantly thinking of the stitches I want to use, how to create the texture I'm after, the layering, the direction that I might need, and even color palettes. But all of that comes in with the thread. The thread is the paint that you add on top, and that is where your design detail comes in. Most of the time, you don't need to be an amazing artist to draw your own designs. In fact, sometimes the more detailed your design is, the harder it is to transfer it onto your fabric. Unless you can print it directly on. Boy, I learned this one the hard way, spending hours meticulously transferring pattern details. Obviously, if you have to be super detailed, like with thread painting or a lifelike design, then that's super important. I mentioned earlier that my mum did a floristry course when I was a teenager, so she taught me some of the floristry skills as well. What goes through my head as I am drawing is often some of what I like to think of as fundamentals of floral arrangements. Obviously, not everything translates directly across to embroidery, but certain rules work well. Things like keeping an uneven number of flowers, mixing up large and small accents, keeping larger and more open blooms towards the bottom of a piece and the buds higher up. There's actually quite a lot, but pro tip number 9 is to look up floral arrangements for inspiration when designing floral designs. Jumping straight into tip number 10, which is to take some time to work out the details before you even start stitching. By this stage, I have sketched out my design in Procreate and have a pretty good idea of what I want the end result to look like. This means I tend to have a color palette already in mind, and I have a good idea of the color and type of fabric I will be using. Once I have decided on a fabric, I then transfer my pattern. Now, there are so many different ways you can do this, and I definitely want to get more into it on an episode here on the podcast, but I'll just tell you that my current favorite transfer method is using my iPad and a heat friction pen. Once my pattern is transferred, I move on to matching my colors to my DMC thread collection. I like to pick all of my colors I would use at the very beginning to make sure that they go well together, and will often pick out more colors than what I might end up using. I tend to love those boho color palettes, which just means that the colors will have more of a mid hue to them and a bit more intensity. I know my own color preferences, and I have a few favorite colors that I love to always use. DMC 783, I'm looking at you. But I also like to take into account popular color choices as well. Color is a great area to experiment with and allow yourself to have a little bit of fun. My personal style is to stay away from those intense bright colors unless I'm doing a realistic design. I'm actually super thankful that I have a massive collection of threads because this is a fiddly exercise. And while it is my favorite thing to do, I know I can get stressed out if I was trying to color match in a craft store. One thing that is common to all embroiderers is that we can never have too much embroidery thread, as each new project often calls for our unique color palette. So when starting our next project, we usually head to our craft store only to be disappointed by the limited selection of colors. Did you know that DMC has over 500 unique colors of embroidery thread? Yep, and if you're anything like me, now that I know this fact, it's a bit like Pokemon in that I've got to catch them all. Introducing Thread Club by Life with Bess. Thread Club is a monthly thread subscription service that systematically works through the full DMC thread collection with a beautiful curated color palette each and every month. This means that you can just start stitching straight away. Stop the overwhelm at the craft store and sign up today for Thread Club for only $14 per month plus shipping. No locking contracts and cancel anytime. Sign up today and get your free DMC thread inventory checklist with purchase. The monthly cutoff date is the 16th of every month, so you don't want to miss out. Worldwide shipping is now available, with local shipping to the US, UK, and Canada coming soon. Just go to lifewithbess.com. Similar to how I was thinking about the colors while I was drawing my design, I know as I'm drawing, I'm already thinking about what stitches I'm going to use, particularly which ones to use to get the texture and details I'm after, because I love adding these to my piece. I majority of the time use stranded cotton, but occasionally will use pearl cotton, and I am really looking forward to experimenting with adding some tapestry wool and yarn to some pieces really soon. I definitely have my favorite stitches that I go back to time and time again, but I also like to learn and practice something new each time as well. Sometimes it's blending colors or learning a completely new stitch. There is always something new I'm experimenting with. This is also where I start to plan for the number of strands I'm going to use for each aspect of my design. This leads us to tip number 11. Don't feel like you're stuck with using all 6 strands. Don't worry, this is super common with beginners, but I personally tend to always use 2 to 3 strands of thread because I like the balance of simplicity and the detailing that it allows. I like to think a lot about my layers as I'm stitching. Are there elements that overlap or details that I want to be on top? This helps me work out where I'm going to start and to have a plan in mind for how I'm going to work my way through the design. Thinking ahead is always so much better than needing to unpick whole sections. I also make sure that I have more than enough thread and other supplies for the project, as I absolutely hate having to do supply trips mid-project. After all of that prep work and thinking is done, it is finally time to start stitching. Oh my goodness, I do a lot of thinking, don't I? Stitching is actually the most relaxing part for me, even though I am constantly adjusting and changing things. This is my time to chill and relax and enjoy the process. I normally have a TV show blaring in the background, and depending how complex the piece is, I've been known to smash through several seasons of a show while still working on the same piece. Tip number 12 is to get comfortable modifying your pattern even after you've transferred it to your fabric. Whether it is adding in extra details because there's a noticeable gap, the color was wrong, or the stitch wasn't right, or you didn't use the right number of threads you were after. It's actually quite okay to unpick anything you don't like. And personally, I've never regretted unpicking anything that wasn't quite right, and I always feel a lot better redoing it. Once the hoop is finished and I am completely happy with it, I tend to let out a massive sigh of relief and then take a million photos and videos for my Instagram and TikTok. If I know what the hoop is for, I will then back it with a second layer of fabric to hide the back of my stitches and keep it clean, and then I'll use a hot glue gun to secure the fabric. If I'm not exactly sure what is happening with it yet, I will just tuck the fabric under for the photos and keep it unfinished just in case I want to display it in a frame or stretch it over some canvas. I also put off backing my hoops because, if I'm honest, it's not one of my favorite jobs. The whole process to this point has been about turning an idea and concept into a design, which can then be stitched into an embroidery hoop. However, turning it into an instructional embroidery pattern is a whole other ballgame. This is my tip number 13. Keep track of everything you do. That is, if you are planning to create a pattern. No pressure. I am constantly jotting down steps, making note on colors, strands of threads, tips and tricks, and stitches as I sew. I then also film tutorials and sections as I'm working on them so that they are ready for TikTok and as extra videos to include with the patterns. Writing instructions and thinking of how to explain and teach different techniques comes with practice, and I'm still learning the best way to help people stitch my patterns successfully. I'm super thankful to my husband, Jake, who actually proofreads all of my embroidery patterns, fixes up my grammatical mistakes, and simplifies the language so it is easier to understand. He's not an embroiderer, so it is actually really helpful having an outside perspective in trying to understand the written instructions. This leads to tip number 14, which goes hand in hand with our previous point. Pay really close attention to the number of different thread colors and the variety of stitches used in each design. When I first started stitching, I wasn't thinking about patterns at all. I would use 15 to 16 different colors of thread that were somewhat super similar to each other, and then only use them for one tiny section in the piece. Now I'm getting a lot smarter with this and try to be really intentional and think about my ideal customer and who I'm serving. And I think of how many skeins of thread people will need to go out and buy, whether it is more cost effective for me to purchase the thread in bulk and offer it as a pattern kit. I also like to make sure my patterns cater to a variety of skill levels, so the stitch types need to reflect this as well. This next little section I've titled Lessons from My 28-Day Embroidery Challenge. My biggest embroidery collection so far is from the 28-day challenge I did for National Embroidery Month in February a few months ago, where I stitched different Australian native flora every single day for a whole month. I wanted each of these pieces to be accurate in their colouring and shape, not just whimsical generic flowers as I had done in the past. I actually remember that I'd wanted to do another 100-day challenge, but just embroidery like I'd done for my drawing one. And I never actually finished, by the way, but thankfully Jake talked me out of that one. My 28-day challenge was actually 2 to 3 weeks of prep work, 28 days of stitching, and then 3 to 4 weeks recovery. So this is my final tip, number 15, which is specifically for anyone doing a challenge of this magnitude. Allow yourself a lot more time in your schedule for prep and recovery than just the challenge itself, especially if you are designing all of the pieces as well. Normally, most of my designs take between 15 to 30 hours to stitch, and I'm in no rush. But for my 28-day challenge, I had a massive time restriction, and I had to really simplify my design so I could stitch it within 4 to 8 hours. There was lots of time spent researching on Pinterest and Google in prep for this challenge. I had a clear direction of what I wanted. So similar to my 100-day drawing challenge, I was careful to just use photos and artworks as reference images only and combine elements that I love from different angles and aspects into my own drawing style. I also designed all of the patterns weeks before the challenge started, and I even had all of my hoops set up with the correct colored fabric, transferred the pattern, and had my stash of to-be-stitched hoops sitting in a pile waiting for me to start the challenge. I probably made things another 10 times harder because I knew that I wanted to turn them all into digital patterns. So not only did I have a lot of things to consider and remember, we were also turning them all into PDF pattern booklets as we were going. So lessons learned, embroidery challenges take a lot of time. So there you have it. 15 tips for finding inspiration and turning a concept into an embroidered creation from my experience and my design process. If you're not at this stage yet, stitching from a pattern is a fantastic way for anyone who wants to learn different skills, techniques, and practice what you know. It helps you discover what you enjoy and what you don't. In fact, it is a very important step in finding your own style and creative voice. I hope you found this episode helpful. You can find all of the links to everything mentioned in this episode in the show notes on our website, stitchingandco.com. I will also link our Instagram details as well as our Facebook group and where you can find the PDF patterns that were created as a part of my 28-day challenge. Don't forget to push that subscribe button, share this podcast with your stitchy friends. And if you loved this episode, why not leave us a review on iTunes or on our Facebook page? Until next week, happy stitching.